Tundra, Green Bay's choice for news talk. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Police and fire crews responding to an explosion in Palm Springs, California this afternoon. Dispatched calls captured on Broadcastify.
A loud explosion. We have a black cloud of smoke coming up.
Authorities say it appears multiple buildings are damaged. The governor's office describing it as a health facility. The FBI also on scene. Severe storms leaving a path of destruction from Texas to New Jersey. Strong winds and reported tornadoes blamed for more than two dozen deaths. Kentucky, the hardest hit with at least 18 dead. And in St. Louis, Mayor Kara Spencer estimates some 5,000 buildings were damaged.
I haven't seen a storm like this, not in the city of St. Louis in my lifetime.
President Trump in an online post says he will hold a phone call with Russia's President Vladimir Putin Monday and then Ukraine's President Zelensky after direct talks on a ceasefire deal between both countries fell apart on Friday. This is ABC News. It is day two of the New Jersey transit strike. 450 train engineers off the job and trains at a standstill. That's impacting some 350,000 commuters each day, forcing people to find other ways to get to weekend events. Union workers say they want more pay. ABC's Marcus Solis says the first round of negotiations resume today.
So close, but yet so far for those commuters who are facing a second straight day without rail service as the strike continues. But the good news is that both sides are indeed talking. Now, negotiations will resume between New Jersey Transit and the Engineers Union.
New Jersey's governor yesterday says the union rejected a pay raise deal in March. The union says it's the first strike on the railroad since 1983. In Rome, tomorrow marks 10 days since the College of Cardinals elected the first American pope. Former Cardinal Robert Prevost, known as Pope Leo now, will be formally installed as the next leader of the Catholic Church. I'm Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Matt and Air on Air.
Corrine Hendrickson, she owns a daycare center.
We're doing this day without childcare. What we do is we talk about what would happen, what would it look like if we didn't have childcare. But we also talk about what could it be? What can we do to change the system? I love all the protests. I love all the people speaking out against things. But we also need to participate in democracy by saying what we want and what we need and talk to our reps that way. So that's what this event is all about.
Catch Matt and Air on Air at its new time. Weekday mornings, 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Hello, Bluey.
Talking with our pal Stuart J. Waddles. This is an episode of Bluey that Stuart turned me on to. I like this show so much. Would it be weird if I left my wife, remarried, and had kids with someone else just so I could watch Bluey with my new set of kids?
I don't think it'd be that weird. I've heard a weirder.
You have?
Make a great story.
You get the exclusive.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and data shows Wisconsin kids are in crisis. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
The report from the Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health shows the numbers have increased dramatically over the past 10 years. While rates of anxiety, depression, self-harm, and suicidal thoughts went up across the board, girls saw an overall higher increase. Wisconsin boys, however, are 2 to 4 times more likely to die by suicide than girls, according to the report. Amy Marsman says these trends are worse for LGBTQ plus students and students of color.
They feel less connected to their school and less likely to report that they feel they belong at their school. So we know that there are target populations that we should really focus on.
Marsman says teens are also getting less sleep than ever before, which is foundational to their mental health. More than 20% of teens reported self-harm and nearly 25% of girls reported seriously considering suicide, according to the report. Marsman says factors like rising food insecurity, particularly among students of color, also play a significant role. She says additional support during the pandemic helped to eliminate food insecurity gaps, but now Black kids in Wisconsin are 5 times more likely to be hungry than white kids.
Some of these everyday situations really impact youth mental health, whether you're getting enough sleep, whether you are getting enough to eat, whether there's financial stability in your household. All of those are factors, and they are disproportionately impacting kids of color.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, a low in the mid-40s. For tomorrow, partly sunny, a high near 60 degrees, and highs to the upper 50s with a mix of sun and clouds Monday, the wind up a little bit. Some showers into the area Tuesday, currently at 62 degrees.
Maggie Dawn.
At 4:30, I'm joined by Benga Ajilore, a former advisor with the USDA, talking about the threats to rural hospitals posed by the Republican budget reconciliation.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to the Civic Media Spotlight. Jeff Olson, legendary coach from Ishpeming, Michigan, shares with Mino and the mayor the heart-wrenching story of his son Daniel's battle with anxiety and depression leading to his tragic suicide. Jeff now travels, sharing his son's story through a powerful documentary, aiming to save lives by encouraging open conversations on mental health.
Coming to Northeast Wisconsin, live from the Civic Media Studios, this is Mino and the Mayor. Here are your hosts, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back on a foggy Thursday morning here in downtown Green Bay, Apton, Oshkosh, and Hull Point, Manitowoc. Every place really foggy out there. Please be very careful.
You actually had something happen to you this morning that just let people know issues with Cellcom service.
Yeah.
All the phones are down. That's why you could not call me this morning, and I just got notification on that from another source. So
Cellcom is down, so it's not my phone.
It's not your phone.
So it's not from not paying the bill.
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, we've got a very special guest. Jeff, are you there, buddy?
I'm here.
Jeff Olson, live from Ishpeming.
Yep.
Okay, all buddy. Right. Hey, Jeff Olson, I'm going to give a little background. Jeff is a legendary high school football and basketball coach. Three state championships. I think three runners up. Just unbelievable what he did with the Ishpeming Hematites. And had a son who was just an amazing athlete. In fact, my brother-in-law was his coach at St. Norbert. And Jeff, I'm just going to let you take it from there in regards to what got you here today, what you're doing right now, and what you've pretty much devoted the rest of your life to. So, Coach Jeff Olson from Ishpeming, Michigan. Jeff, go ahead and take it away in regards to the Do It for Daniel program, buddy.
Sure. I've been coaching for, well, I'm retired now, but coached for 37 years, 27 at Ishpeming. Had some good teams. My son Daniel grew up in our program, bringing him to practice as a kindergartner, really a great athlete. I always say this, pretty much an all-American kid. Tons of friends, girlfriends, good at pretty much everything he did. He was an all-state quarterback he was only 5'8", 165 pounds, but he still was an all-state quarterback in basketball. He was Conference Defensive Player of the Year.
Hey, Jeff, if I could just interject, every athlete in the UP is 5'8", 160 pounds. Let's be honest.
You're not kidding there. You're not kidding there. So, yeah. And, he led us to the state championship game in 2010. I believe that was his senior year. And his big dream was, it was never about him. You know, he just wanted to win. He wanted me to win a state championship. But he struggled with anxiety and depression, and he actually wrote a paper when he was a senior in high school that he thought he started to feel different in sixth grade. And actually, my wife and I noticed some things were off in sixth grade. But he did what so many people do. He fought it on his own in silence for 5 years until the spring of his junior year in high school. And that's the first time he came to us, asked for help. He was suicidal at the time. Come to find out later on that 2 years before that, as a freshman, he was extremely close to taking his life, had it all planned out, had everything set up. The only reason he didn't do it was grandma was in the other room. But anyways, he came to us, asked for help as a junior in high school, fought it for 3 more years, had a couple suicide attempts in between there. You know, we got him help, but he, you know, there's such a huge stigma involved with anxiety and depression that people are going to think you're crazy or you're weak. You can't handle everyday life or just suck it up. And, or maybe you're faking something and it's farther from the truth. So with all that stigma involved, and you know, you're talking probably when he was getting help, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010. You know, the help didn't make sense to him. It wasn't a quick fix. So he didn't do everything he was supposed to do, you know, as far as taking his medications, as far as therapy. Therapy didn't make sense to him. Like I said, it wasn't a quick fix. So anyways, fast forward to his senior year. Got us to the state championship game. We lost that game. He ended up going to St. Norbert to play college football, thinking he might, you know, a change of venue, change of scenery might help him. It didn't. He was having multiple panic attacks a day. He ended up having to drop out of school after middle of his second year there. And came home, got a job, but ultimately the anxiety and depression was too much for him. And he ended up taking his life at 1 month before his 20th birthday. And, you know, obviously tough on us, tough on our family. But I felt the need, and my wife and I felt the need to speak up and not hide this. And we decided 2 days after he passed away at the funeral home, you know, trying to write his obituary, that we were going to put this out in the open, talk about it, and in hopes of educating people so they didn't have to go through what my son Daniel went through, so loved ones, parents, family members don't have to go through what our family went through. So what happened was, when Daniel played in the state championship game, it was down in Detroit. Somebody on the video that was filming the game for Fox Sports remembered that game, was captivated by the story in 2012, because we went down in 2012. That actually Daniel took his life. He was going to, when he gave up St. Norbert football, he was going to be an assistant coach with us. He actually worked with the kids, and then 2 weeks or a week and a half before the season started, that's when he took his life. So it was kind of a dedication. The team dedicated the season to Daniel, to us, our family. We had a good team, not a great team, but we ended up kind of overachieving, went down, won the state championship that year. Kind of, like I said earlier, that was kind of Daniel's dream, for me to win one. One of the guys that was filming on the video camera was captivated by the story. His daughter was suffering at the time. So him and his wife had never done it before, but they wanted to make a documentary about Daniel's life. They came up, talked to us about it. My wife wasn't on board at the time, but they came up, kind of convinced us, kind of convinced her. So, you know, and number one reason, she didn't want her son out there for people to judge. And when we kind of put all our trust in them, they made a documentary, Daniel's life. And so when we had that documentary, He also made a Facebook page, Do It For Daniel Facebook page. People started calling schools, mainly communities, to see if I would go speak and talk about suicide prevention, mental health, anxiety and depression. So 7 years ago, I decided to do that, and I've been doing that ever since, been to many schools around the Midwest, and sharing Daniel's story, but also speaking along with it to try to educate people about what this is, what it feels like to have it, what the symptoms are. Because, you know, when I've been traveling and you talk to people who are struggling, and even now, you know, it's hard for them to put into words because it's, you know, it's mental, you know, it's mental pain, and it's hard for them to put into words. So we want to give people words to say, to come forward, confidence to come forward. To show that this is a very common illness, it's treatable, and there's no shame in coming forward. So that's where we are.
Man, I really feel bad for you. I don't know what to say, 19-year-old. It sounds to me, though, a couple things you said, it sounds like you did a lot. I mean, you did a lot. I think sometimes people are like, I wish I would have done something.
Get over it, whatever.
All right, or
you
just,
didn't. You guys had that empathy.
You know, when I go around and speak, you know, every once in a while you'll get somebody, well, you know, because the message is this is treatable, and it is treatable. And they're saying, well, you did everything. How come it wasn't treatable for Daniel? And, you know, there's a couple things involved. Well, Daniel didn't do everything he was supposed to because it didn't make sense to him. The stigma was there. So he didn't do therapy very well. He was supposed to do some homework, and he didn't do it. Some of the medications, you know, sometimes the medications don't work because there's so many medications out there. Everybody's is different.
Right.
So, you know, our message is, you know, if you get put on a medication after 2 or 3 weeks, you're not feeling better or the same, you got to go back and say, I don't think this is working. This is the way I'm feeling. Because you would with any other illness. And I always use the analogy of my knee. I hurt my knee jogging. I went and they manipulated, said, oh, you have a slightly torn meniscus. Give it 2 or 3 weeks. And I gave it a month, went back to the doctor, could describe the pain. He gave me a cortisone shot. A month later, I went back because I still had pain. He did minor surgery, cleaned it up. Was supposed to be taken care of. I went back again. I knew I wasn't going to get judged. I could describe where the pain was, you know, what I could do, what I couldn't do. Went back, another cortisone shot. Month and a half later, went back again. Was able to describe it, knew I wasn't going to get judged. They did a partial knee replacement, and I'm pain-free. And my point is, I kept going back because I knew I could describe where the pain was. I knew I could. I knew I wasn't going to get judged. I knew this was real.
Yeah.
When you have a medical illness of the brain, that's hard to do.
Right.
We're with Jeff Olson, unbelievably successful high school football coach who walked away from that to spread a message that is so important. And it is Mental Health Month, and we've been talking about that a bunch. But we really need to also concentrate on the young people. You know, because our era, let's be honest, Jeff, the UP, our dads or whomever, get over it. What the hell's wrong with you?
Yep.
Get over it. What do you got to complain about? Jeff, stick around. We've got to send her a 1 minute break. Back with more. Jeff Olson, Do It For Daniel program. Folks, please look this up. Look it up. We'll be back with more with Coach Olson right after this.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. From Ashwaubenon to Alloway, this is 97.9 WGBW.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. The biggest thing that happens in Wisconsin state government every 2 years is the state budget. And last week at the state capitol, Republican lawmakers took a step forward in the process by voting out more than 600 measures from Governor Tony Evers' budget proposal. This has become a familiar step in this era of divided government. This is now the fourth budget proposal that Evers has put forward, and each one has been met with a similar fate. Even as this has become the custom, it doesn't have to be this way. Republicans could honestly engage with this budget and debate it on its merits. There are good, smart proposals here on everything from health care to education to child care to environmental protection. And if there are items here they disagree on, make the case. Have the debate. But by voting everything out and starting from scratch, they are letting down the people of Wisconsin they are elected to represent by refusing to have this debate on a very basic level. We should expect better.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to the Maggie Dawn Show. Richard Trent, Executive Director of the Main Street Alliance, joins Maggie and explains what the proposed tax cut will do to average Americans. He explains the ramifications of allowing the child tax credit and the Obamacare exchange to expire, and how debilitating it will be to the working middle class. To hear all of the shows featured on the Civic Media Spotlight, download the Civic Media app available on the Google Play or Apple App Store. Or catch the shows after the fact as a podcast at civicmedia.us on Spotify or Apple Music. Stay tuned after the Spotlight also for Max Inc. Radio across the Civic Media Network from 6 to 10 p.m. Now, here's Maggie Dawn.
Welcome back, everybody. My big thanks. I hope we can get him back. Had a little connectivity problem. Big thanks to Richard Trent, the executive director of Main Street Alliance, a national advocacy organization for small businesses. The Trump tariff tax terror will kill small businesses. It'll kill small businesses in your community. And consider this, everyone, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, as I often say, the top 1% of companies in this country, what I'm going to refer to as mega corporations, take down 80% of corporate revenues. Okay? We see what I'm going to call revenue inequality in business America, just like we see grotesque income and wealth inequality for us regular people. The top 1% of corporations in this country take down 80% of business revenues. That's why the Trump tariff terror, along with the small margins, the inability to negotiate at scale because you have less bargaining power, on and on and on. This is bad for small businesses. When it's bad for small businesses, it's bad for the 68 million Americans that work in small businesses. We're going to see bankruptcies. And at the same time, these tariffs are driving prices up for the rest of us on our regular goods. Remember, 70% of U.S. GDP is driven by consumer spending. That means us middle class folks, because trust me, the law of diminishing marginal returns for the top 1% mean they're not buying the 100th Rolls Royce. They're good with three. So they spend less. That GDP, our economic engine of this country, is the middle class. So as small businesses are being actively hurt every day by the Trump tariff terror of taxes, meanwhile, the fat cats and the mega corporations are doing better. And on Capitol Hill today, as my guest Richard Trent knows, the House Ways and Means Committee passing the largest gutting of Medicaid and food emergency assistance in American history, while at the same time giving their stamp of approval to the largest tax cut in American history for the wealthiest of wealthy among us, the top 1%. So, Richard, let me ask you, are we looking at quite a crisis tipping point where some of the very things that help the people at greatest risk of housing insecurity, food insecurity, joblessness, all those programs being gutted before our eyes while small businesses are under attack and the middle class being asked to pay more and more for less and less? What happens next?
again, we have to pay attention to what the Trump to what Trump has been saying all along. Trump will tell you firsthand that he grew up believing there are winners and there are losers, right? This is an administration that is comfortable with creating a class of losers as they understand it. And they're crafting policies to execute that vision. We're talking about, I've seen numbers between 8 and 20 million Americans that are going to lose their Medicaid coverage. One thing we haven't been talking enough about with Medicaid coverage, GOP and Republican congressional leaders are the first to talk about our fentanyl crisis, but they never talk about the fact that fentanyl treatment and recovery, a lot of that is covered by Medicaid services. So when you're gutting Medicaid to the tune that they're talking about, you're also talking about hundreds of thousands of Americans not being able to access the fentanyl, recovery.
The treatment and recovery they need, yes.
It's absolutely unbelievable. So there's the Medicaid piece. There's the SNAP program and the food assistance, right?
Yes.
There's the tax code, which is kind of a part of it, where they are not even considering raising taxes on the wealthy. They're considering extending a tax code that gives 80%+ of the tax benefit to the top 1% of earners.
Yes.
I did not misspeak there.
No, you did not. I was just explaining that. Yes.
In this current tax code, and the one that they're trying to extend and add a couple more doodads onto it, 80%+ of the benefit goes to the top 1% of earners. So if you are not in that, if you're not in that top 1%, this tax code is a raw deal for you. We're talking about not expanding the child tax credit, which cut child poverty in half just a few years ago. We're talking about not extending the premium tax credits, which have kept health insurance premiums somewhat affordable on the Obamacare exchanges at the state level. Those are about to expire. So older working families in this country can expect their health insurance premiums to jump up to, on average, $17,000 a year if this stuff is allowed to expire. This is not a game. This is an administration actively trying to create a class of losers, and we have to fight back.
Richard, it's as if you and I were mind melding for the entire first hour of my show. I just went through what I call the CBO's distributional analysis, which is the fancy economist talk for who benefits the most and who gets hurt the most from this tax corporate billionaire giveaway, which is what this is. To repeat, ladies and gentlemen, the top 1% will take down 80% of the benefit of this tax giveaway to the wealthiest. Why do billionaires need to be taxless? They don't. They have all the stuff they could possibly ever want. And none of this wealth has ever trickled down to any of us. $51 trillion. From the bottom 90% to the top 1% from 1981 to 2021. And folks, if you're in the bottom 20%, guess what this tax quote cut will do for you? It will reduce your income on average by over $1,000 a year for the poorest working folks in our communities. I didn't say this. Senator Josh Hawley said it. It is immoral. Get activated. This is not a test anymore. This is the real deal. The alarms are all on high. The red lights are on. Call your congresspeople. Say no. Thank you so much, Richard Trent, Executive Director of the Main Street Alliance. Cannot wait to have you back. This great discussion continues on the other side. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor. ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Police and fire crews responding to an explosion in Palm Springs, California this afternoon. Dispatched calls captured on Broadcastify.
A loud explosion. Outside the city, we have a black cloud of smoke coming up.
Authorities say it appears multiple buildings are damaged. The governor's office describing it as a health facility. The FBI also on scene. Severe storms leaving a path of destruction from Texas to New Jersey. Strong winds and reported tornadoes blamed for more than two dozen deaths. Kentucky, the hardest hit, with at least 18 dead. And in St. Louis, Mayor Kara Spencer estimates some 5,000 buildings were damaged.
I haven't seen a storm like this, not in the city of St. Louis in my lifetime.
President Trump in an online post says he will hold a phone call with Russia's President Vladimir Putin Monday and then Ukraine's President Zelensky after direct talks on a ceasefire deal between both countries fell apart on Friday. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
The Brewers lose to the Twins. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports at AmFam Field in Milwaukee, where the Brewers face the Twins tonight in Game 2 of their three-game series. The crew losing to the Twins here last night 3-0. Minnesota, the hottest team in baseball, has now won 12 in a row. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
Give credit to the Twins. This is a team that's played really good, and they're kind of their mojo's going. The balls are falling. You know, they're playing good, and they're pitching really well.
Tobias Myers gets the start tonight for Milwaukee. NFL Packers head coach Matt LaFleur tells NBC Sports he expects quarterback Aaron Rodgers will sign with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I just can't see him not playing the game of football this year, and that obviously makes the most sense. I know that just in our discussions over the years, he's a guy that he's had as much respect for as anybody, as a guy like Mike Tomlin. So I could certainly see that coming to fruition here pretty shortly.
That's Matt LaFleur with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, a low in the mid-40s. For tomorrow, partly sunny, a high near 60 degrees. And highs to the upper 50s with a mix of sun and clouds Monday, the wind up a little bit. Some showers into the area Tuesday. Currently at 62 degrees.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. After the election of liberal-leaning Justice Janet Prosewitz in 2023, Wisconsin State Assembly and Senate maps were challenged in the Wisconsin Supreme Court and subsequently thrown out as unconstitutional. But justices passed on a challenge to the congressional districts. With April's election of liberal Justice Susan Crawford, pro-voter groups are trying again for a fairer congressional voting map. In early 2024, the legislature ignored six fairer maps and adopted Democratic Governor Tony Evers' least change compromise map, later allowed to stand by the U.S. Supreme Court. GOP candidates were elected to 6 of 8 congressional districts with only 50% of the statewide vote in 2024. Two challenges were filed May 7th and 8th, one by the Elias Group contending that the Least Change Directive had no basis in the Wisconsin Constitution, and the second by the Campaign Legal Center argues that Evers' map ignored traditional redistricting norms, splits too many counties, and didn't equally apportion the districts. A record $100 million was spent by both sides in the recent Wisconsin Supreme Court race. The current margin in the U.S. House is 220 Republicans to 213 Democrats. We've linked to the filings and local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Dr. Kristen Lyerly.
Freedom Town Chair and Director of Parks for Outagamie County, Justin Schumacher. Do you think the bureaucracy is responding to the needs of the people?
No, I think if it was responsive, we wouldn't be in the position we're in right now. That doesn't mean we burn the entire system down. How do we solve it? Get involved. Join your Parks Committee. Recognize where we're not good and improve it.
The Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show, Saturday and Sunday afternoons at 3 on WGBW and WISS and the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. The fabulous farm babe, Pam Yonke, will join us to talk about resources for Wisconsin farmers. Please don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We return you now to the Civic Media Spotlight. And up next, we'll hear a segment from Matt and Air on Air. This week, Jane, Greg, and Calvin welcomed on Judge Paul Michael to the show. He is part of the Keeping Our Republic's Article 3 Coalition. This group is a collection of judges appointed by presidents from both sides of the aisle. They welcome on Judge Michael to discuss the announcement from the White House regarding the exploration of suspending habeas corpus. This is a two-part interview. Stay tuned for the second part later this half hour.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane, Matt and Air, Greg Bach, Calby on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Happy to be joined by our guest. He is a member of Keep Our Republic's Article 3 Coalition. Judge Paul Michel is here. Good morning, Judge Michel. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning to you and your listeners.
Judge, can you tell us, first of all, what this organization is that you belong with? What is Keep Our Republic's Article 3 Coalition, and what is your goal?
The coalition has presently 30 retired federal judges as members, and the number keeps growing day by day. Our goal is to help people understand in the din of claims and counterclaims and propaganda how courts work and what they need to do their job properly, which basically is to not be interfered with so that the judge can decide the case on the law and not on political power plays by anybody.
Essentially, stay out of it and let us do our job, right?
That's a good way to put it. And of course, the job sometimes involves checking excesses by the Congress or the executive branch if they go beyond their legal authority and do something unlawful. Then it's the job of the court to say, well, that's unlawful. It cannot stand.
It's just that is more important than ever. I think now that we're under the second Trump administration and we see some of the things that are going on and some of the things that they are kicking around. And I wanted to start with this because I am not that well versed in habeas corpus. And I would really like you to explain, Judge Michel, again, Stephen Miller, who was in the Trump administration, says we can suspend habeas corpus. No big deal. What does that mean? What is habeas corpus, first and foremost?
Great question. Of course, it's an ancient Latin phrase. It's been a feature of American law since the beginning, and before that, for centuries, English law. The basic idea is that if somebody is detained under assertion of lawful authority by somebody, usually an executive branch official, that lawfulness should be able to be tested by a judge. So if there's evidence to support an arrest or other detention, that can be presented to the judge. And then the judge says, okay, there is a lawful basis, go ahead. If there is not a lawful basis, then the judge says, stop, you must free that person you've detained, because there's no lawful basis to hold that person. So it's a test of legality.
So essentially, say I get arrested for some reason, I get taken into custody by the administration for some reason, and habeas corpus allows me to defend myself and say, this is why these charges are bogus, or this is why these charges should not apply. Is that accurate?
That's true, but it's also a chance for a judge to question the government official who's arrested you. Say, what was your basis? Did you have a warrant? What are the facts? What law are you acting under? So it's a chance for the arrested or detained person to give their side of the story, but it's also a chance for the judge to make sure that the basis asserted by the arresting authorities is fully tested.
And Judge, one of the things they're saying about this, the wanting to suspend habeas corpus, is in times of invasion, and they're using immigration as a tactic. And is there a litmus test used by judges or government officials to actually say, all right, we are at the point, we are at, like, let's say there was an actual invasion, to suspend habeas corpus? Or is this something that would be a trickle down event where you'd say, all right, we have these examples? How do you even determine what would suspend something so important in our greatest document?
Well, we might be able to imagine a case that would be in a gray zone. Mm-hmm. But the problems with immigration are not a close call, in my judgment. The suspension power, allowing habeas corpus to be temporarily set aside for urgent emergencies, is limited to two circumstances. One is foreign armed invasion, and the other is internal armed rebellion. So it seems to me quite clear that we don't have anything approaching either of those tests, and therefore for habeas corpus rights to be suspended would be unlawful and will not stand. Secondly, the ability for the habeas corpus rights to be temporarily set aside is a power vested in Congress, not in the executive branch. The provision is part of a statute. It's based on part of Article 1. That's the congressional part of the Constitution. Article 3 is the judicial part, hence Article 3 coalition, referring to judges. So Mr. Miller can say whatever he wants, and so can anybody else, but that doesn't make it true.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Judge Paul Michel. He's a member of Keep Our Republic's Article 3 Coalition, and right now we are talking about habeas corpus and what is it and why is it important. Judge Michel, say the Trump administration did find a way to justify suspending habeas corpus or ignoring habeas corpus. What would that mean for regular Americans? What would that mean for our legal system?
Well, basically, it would mean that anybody could be arrested and imprisoned anytime for any reason or no reason at all. And there would be no way that person or their family or their friends or anybody else could help them. They would sometimes simply disappear, as happened in many foreign countries where government authorities just, quote, disappeared people. Sometimes they went to jails and people knew where they were. Other times they literally disappeared. And then many times later bodies were found. So it's a terrible problem if there's no way to test the lawfulness of detention, because it means the people in charge of the police type organizations can do anything they want anytime for any reason with no check on their power. The whole idea of our Constitution is based on checks and balances. The courts are supposed to be a check on excess by the other two branches, unlawful actions. And correspondingly, if the courts act improperly, the Congress can step in. Judges can be impeached, so can other officials. So the whole idea is each branch is supposed to do its job, stay out of the job of the others, and serve as a check if one of the other branches goes off the rails.
Jane and I like to say we are not lawyers or judges. We are lawyer and judge adjacent. So I just want to ask you a question, and because I want to hear you say the words. When I talked about this on social media, someone said to me, well, this is just for illegal immigrants, isn't it? And another lawyer piped up and said, when they suspend habeas corpus, it's not for some, it's for all. There's no asterisk. If they suspend it at all, it's going to be applied to all. And there's not just a, well, habeas corpus, but if you are so-and-so. That is true, correct?
You are correct. It is either applicable or totally suspended for anybody and everybody everywhere in the whole country. So if habeas corpus were suspended, any American citizen who lived a totally perfect lawful life could be arbitrarily arrested by authorities, and there would be no protection and no check and no recovery from that. So it's a big threat. It's not a small thing. And it can't be limited to violent, illegal immigrants or any other kind of group. You are exactly right about that, Greg. You'd be a good lawyer.
Yes.
Oh, God, don't tell him that, Judge, because we're never going to hear the... His head is going to go...
For the record, I got all A's in con law, so just putting that there.
Judge Paul Michel is our guest, and we're talking about habeas corpus, and I think it's important that people understand countries like Russia and North Korea and China, even, they grab you and they disappear you. They do this with political rivals. They do this with anybody who can.
Journalists,
anybody who wants to speak out against the regime. That's what they do in those countries. I would think that is not what we want to see in America.
It would be totally inconsistent with every year of our existence as a country and contravene our law and create a horrible circumstance for all our citizenry.
I'm curious, when you talk to other members of your group, what is the level of concern when you hear things like this coming out of the Trump administration?
Well, I should say that misunderstandings and misstatements preceded the Trump administration. There's been a lot of loose, false talk about what the role of judges is, how courts act, why we need them. But I would certainly agree with the idea that it's gotten much worse in recent months under the Trump second term. And that's a great concern because so many things are being done by the administration at a rate never before seen. Hundreds of initiatives, endless numbers of executive orders separate from other initiatives. There are something like 250 lawsuits challenging those actions by the administration pending in the courts, federal courts, all around the country. So this is the huge showdown battle between the rule of law on the one hand and unchecked executive power to do whatever they want on the other hand. It's very stark. It's very worrisome. The other members of the coalition are highly alarmed, and that's why we've all volunteered to try to help clarify things so the citizenry and media and everybody else and policymakers and politicians can understand what's at stake and how it all works.
And just to reiterate, again, going back to habeas corpus and suspending habeas corpus, if this Trump administration were able to do this, this isn't only going to affect people who are here illegally, bad people who are here illegally. This will affect everyone in this country. Mm-hmm. Every single one of us then would be subject to just getting snatched up with essentially no recourse.
And no basis, just because somebody's angry at you or somebody wants to get you out of the way, or you're a media person and they want to silence you, or you're a judge and they want to make sure you can't rule against them.
Which is funny, because as you say that, I'm thinking they're taking people off the street because of tattoos. They're snatching up judges in Milwaukee. So there are examples showing that they are pressing on the limits of this before they completely have to just say, well, you know, habeas corpus is just it's an impediment. Let's just get rid of that.
It's just a suggestion.
Greg, you know, I think it's even a little worse than you say. I think basically the implicit message of the administration is there are no limits. Mm. None. We can do anything we want on any basis that we think is sufficient.
We're going to continue our conversation with Judge Paul Michel on the other side. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We will be right back. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Maggie Dawn Show.
We believe your stories matter because here at WGBW, your stories are our stories too. Our award-winning news team of Lisa Hale, Brittany Merlot, and Terry Barr cover the issues that affect your life every day, the stories that shape your world. You'll hear it on the air, read it online, and see it on social media, wherever you are. Real news, great conversation, 97.9 WGBW, connected to you and your community.
An unsuspecting driver at a gas station in Wisconsin.
Welcome, Pump 15. How you doing?
Great.
Were you wearing your seatbelt today?
I never wear my seatbelt.
We're going to get him. We're going to get him real good.
Oh, my goodness.
Hello, sir. How you doing? Dollar driver. Yeah, it takes 1 second to strap a seatbelt on. Well, let's do this. Let's do it together. Now, don't that feel better?
Donald Driver can't always be there to remind you.
Click it or ticket.
And let's reduce fatalities on Wisconsin roadways.
And I should have recognized your voice when you harassed
me. I'm watching you.
Sponsored by Wisconsin DOT.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good morning and welcome back to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same. 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Our guest is Judge Paul Michel, a member of Keep Our Republic's Article 3 Coalition. And right before the break, we were talking about Stephen Miller and the Trump administration suggesting we just suspend habeas corpus. Who needs it? No big deal. And we did have a question on the live stream from State Senator Chris Alfheim, who asks Judge Michel, could the habeas corpus waiver have been used during the January 6th attack on the Capitol?
I wouldn't think so. The scale of what the statute of providing for the waiver looks to is, you know, mass armed invasion by a foreign power or a foreign terrorist organization or an armed rebellion like the American Civil War. The violence at the Capitol was certainly extreme and extensive, but it doesn't amount to an equivalent of a foreign invasion or a civil war.
But I think it's an interesting parallel. Just imagine if the administration at that point had decided to just snatch these people up and disappear all of them. All of those January 6th people got due process. Mm-hmm. They all went through due process and they were judged by juries of their peers. I can't imagine the shrieking that would come from some folks if they were not allowed the same protections under habeas corpus.
Yes, Jane, you have a very good point. Legal rights have to apply to everybody, and legal limits have to apply to everybody, including judges. And so the question is the situation or the action lawful? And that obviously, in the end, has to be determined by judges, not by officials of the other two branches. The founders gave us a great constitution, I would say. It's lasted longer than any other democratic constitution in the history of the world. It's the oldest democracy republic extant today. And they gave us a government of three parts, three branches. They're all important. They all have their role. You could think of it as a three-legged stool. If you break or take away one of the legs, we know what happens to the stool. Yep. The whole thing collapses and falls over. So all three branches are essential. Earlier, I used the phrase checks, but the rest of the phrase is and balances, checks and balances. The balances part is how each branch has to do its job, be respectful of the other two, stay in its lane, and avoid excess. And when that's done, the government works beautifully. We know how to do it. We've done it for almost 250 years. We ought to keep doing it, I say.
Yep, absolutely. In the couple of minutes that we have left, Judge Michelle, I did want to talk about Judge Hannah Dugan in Milwaukee. A federal grand jury did indict Judge Dugan yesterday on charges she helped a man who was here illegally evade ICE agents. I think it's important that people understand that when you go before a grand jury or a case goes before a grand jury, they're only hearing one side, correct?
That is correct. And so the first chance that the arrested person has to tell their side of the story is when it gets into the court following an indictment. And that's where the Dugan case will be going. Then both sides present evidence, and then a judge makes a determination whether a trial is even warranted. Maybe they'll say yes, maybe they'll say no. And if there is a trial, there still has to be proof by the government that a crime was committed and it's a serious crime, and therefore there should be consequences. So Judge Dugan will have her day in court, as we like to say, day in court. That's another important part of our system. It's very unusual for a judge to be arrested and now indicted. But of course, we like to say, and rightly so, no one is above the law. Not a judge, not the president, not you, not me. And that's the way it has to be if we're going to have a functioning democracy under the rule of law rather than just under the rule of raw political power.
The one thing I would question, though, was the necessity of cuffing her and videotaping all of that. She wasn't a flight risk. It's not like she was going to go anywhere. In most instances, in a case like this, isn't it, here's the date we want you to appear, you show up, we'll release you on your own recognizance?
Yes, that would be the norm. And in fact, in a case like this, I would have expected the accused person to voluntarily surrender immediately. No, there was no need for a dramatic arrest and handcuffing. It looked to me like it was not only unnecessary, but inappropriate, because it just made a mockery of the situation. If the judge is guilty of a crime, she'll be found guilty. If she's not, she'll be acquitted. But the publicity stunt of having a dramatic public arrest was totally unnecessary. I think very unusual and very inappropriate. And I question whether the purposes were legitimate or it was another intimidation tactic aimed at judges and citizens in general. You better do what we want, yep, or you're going to get hammered.
Yep. Yep. Judge Paul Michelle is a member of Keep Our Republic's Article 3 Coalition. It has been so informative and so educational. Judge Michelle, thank you so very, very much. We would love to get you back on in a couple of weeks and just do it. Do a democracy check.
There it is. There it is. I like
thank
that.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you.
Thank
very
you so much for
work
your time.
You're doing.
Thank you, sir.
We have news coming up next. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on air on the Vast, statewide, countrywide. You can pick us up in New Zealand if you have the app. The Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go away.
Before, I know I'll often stop and think about them.
Matt Nair on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 9 to 11. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Tom Hartman here. You're listening to 97.9 WGBW.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Dr. Kristen Lierley, host of the new Dr. Kristen Lierley Show, and artist-actor Steve Segrin joins the program. Now that's how you Monday.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Hey, it's Amanda, and we all know that Northeast Wisconsin has some of the best events around, but trying to find them all can be tricky. So here at WGBW, we decided to do the work for you. Prevent boredom on any night by going to WGBW.fm and click events in the top right corner. You'll never have to spend forever scrolling to find out what's going on in your area. And if you got an event to share, hit us up by emailing info@WGBW.fm. We can work together to have real news and great conversation while giving you the 411 on what's happening in New Wisco.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franz, and in California, the FBI and ATF investigators are on scene after an explosion in Palm Springs today. At least one person is dead, five others injured. It happened near the American Reproductive Centers. ABC's Christian Cordero has more.
This is, if you're not familiar with this area, a really popular stretch of Palm Springs. And Palm Springs in itself is a big tourist town. So as you can imagine, you know, under normal circumstances, there would be a lot of foot traffic. There were a lot of, would be a lot of people in the area. Five people have been injured. One person has been killed.
Police say multiple buildings also sustained damage. At least 27 people are dead across three states following severe storms last night. It included a tornado outbreak, 18 deaths occurring in Kentucky alone. And the manhunt continues for seven of the 10 escapees from a New Orleans jail Friday. Authorities say three captured yesterday have been moved to a state correctional facility in Louisiana. This is ABC News. In California, five people now under arrest. Police.